Yeah?
Yep.
We continue our studies of Hilchas Beis HaBechira. The last time that we learned the laws of Beis HaBechira, we were dwelling on the 10th halacha of the 6th chapter. And that talks about the notion of expanding the Beis HaMikdash and expanding the holy city of Yerushalayim, which has implications, all kinds of halachic implications, because certain things can only be done in the Beit HaMikdash. Certain foods, sacred foods, can only be consumed in the Beis HaMikdash. And then there is something called Kodshim Kalim, which are a lesser or lighter form of holiness, do not have to be consumed only by Kohanim, but by Israelites, members of the Jewish people, who are in a state of ritual purity, and it has to be consumed in the city of Yerushalayim. Furthermore, there are certain agricultural tithes, like something known as Maaser Sheni, the second tithe, which can only be eaten in the city of Yerushalayim, and a variety of other halachot, of laws, ritual law, which apply to the specific municipality, the official municipality of Yerushalayim. And so, we now learn halacha yir alif, ein meisifin al ha'ir. Today's halacha is going to be, as indicated in the title, about the authority. Who has the authority to expand Yerushalayim? Not how you do that, we'll talk about that later, but who has the authority? So the Rambam says, you cannot expand, you cannot grow the city. Oy al ha'azoris, or on the courtyards area, the outer areas of the Beis HaMikdash. This cannot be done, ela, save, only al pi melech, by virtue of a royal edict from a Torah king, v'al pi novi, and by virtue of a prophetic message, God communicating through a human being, uve'urim v'tumim, and through the breastplate that was worn by the Kohen Gadol, which also served as a communications device. There's a dispute between Rashi and Ramban whether the Urim V'tumim is the name for the entire breastplate or the actual parchment with the sacred 72-letter tetragram of God's name that was placed between the folds of that parchment that enabled it to light up, as in the word Urim, and Tumim, that enabled it to be Tamim, or functional. So the breastplate, which was filled with gemstones, studded with gemstones, upon which the Kohen Gadol wore it on his heart, on his chest, and upon which those gemstones were inscribed, engraved, the names of the Shvatim, Hebrew letters. So that gemstone, under a very specific set of circumstances, could serve as a communications device between us, the Jewish people, and Hashem, our Creator. And the Kohen Gadol himself would wear that breastplate, stand in a specific spot of the Beit HaMikdash. A melech, a king of the Jewish people, or a leader of the high court of the Jewish people, would have to come. He would pose the question, and then the Kohen Gadol would look down at the breastplate, and the letters with an answer would light up. So, for example, they could ask a question like, shall we go to war? It's a very serious question. It's a question that involves many innocent lives. It's a question that will change the profile of the nation. And they would ask a question like this to the Urim V'Tumim, and they would get an answer. A lamed and an aleph would light up, which would say, lo. So the Kohen Gadol looked down and he saw lamed aleph. He said, no, we're not going to war. Or there would be chaf and a nun, which would say, Cain, yes. So these are examples of how the Urim V'Tumim would be used. And that is to say that the question of whether or not we would be allowed to expand the holy city of Yerushalayim would have to be performed by virtue of the presence of a melech, a king of the Jewish people. A navi would have to be present amongst the Jewish people, and there would have to be a question posed to the Urim V'Tumim, I presume by the melech. So you need a functioning Kohen Gadol too. And lastly, there's a fourth detail. Val pi Sanhedrin shel shivim v'echad zikenim. This would also have to be by virtue of a court, an ecclesiastical high court comprised of 71 elders. So we need four components in place. To expand the city of Jerusalem, to make the holy city, not the fact that Jerusalem's municipality is expanded today, or that the mayor of Jerusalem presides over a particular shetach, a particular area, or that he collects taxes or arnona, or that there is responsibility from the city council to deal with certain issues. That's not what we're talking about at all. At all. We're talking about the holiness of the city of Jerusalem. By and large, the walls partly are a demarcation, and by and large are not a demarcation at all. Some of them are built on ancient ruins, ancient foundations, and most of the city of Yerushalayim, which is Silwan, the city below, that's entirely left out. So the walls are not the real city of Yerushalayim, and our question is about the holiness of Yerushalayim. So Rambam is very specific. He says, in order to expand holiness, this is serious business. You know, if you eat certain foods outside of Yerushalayim, you have kores. Literally destroys your soul. And when you eat certain foods in the scrimmage of Yerushalayim, it becomes the most life-elixing possible inspirational uplift for the neshama. So this is really about creating sacred scrimmage in the most literal way, which has very real practical implication in Jewish ritual life. You need a king. You need a real live prophet. You need to have a functioning Urim V'Tumim. And finally, a functioning Sanhedrin, ecclesiastical high court, with no less than 71 members. How do we know this? I mean, how could God have told this to us when, in fact, the city of Yerushalayim only rises to prominence during King David's rule? That's like four centuries into the Jewish people's settlement of our eternal homeland, Eretz Yisrael. Rambam says, Shenemar, because it's written. It's written, Kechol asher imara eischa. This, which we're doing right now, says God to Moshe Rabbeinu in the 25th chapter of the book of Exodus, Parshas Truma, when we speak about the consecration of the Mishkan and its artifacts, its sacred boards, sockets, ropes, the brocades, the curtains, the coverings, sanctifying all these things. It says, V'chein tasu. This is how you'll do it for generations. V'chein tasu ledorot. Ledorot, that's how the ninth verse ends. And the Rambam adds one word now. One half sentence. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu melechaya. Moshe Rabbeinu was a melech. He had the halachic designation of a king of Israel, even though we refer to Shaul, Saul, as the first king of Israel, and technically he was the first king of Israel. Nonetheless, Moshe Rabbeinu did have the halachic designation of being a melech. Now, why does the Rambam have to add this? Because an Urim V'Tumim you had. You ask, how do you have an Urim V'Tumim? What do you mean? You had Aaron HaKohen was wearing the original breastplate. It was an Urim V'Tumim. A Navi? Moshe's a Navi. Aaron's a Navi. Miriam is a Nevi'ah, and there were many others who became Nevi'im as well. We know this for a fact. So we have Navi, we have the notion of Urim V'Tumim, we have a Sanhedrin. Well, it's clearly spelled out in the Torah that there were 70 elders that Moshe Rabbeinu gathered around. And if there were 70 elders that Moshe Rabbeinu gathered around, it's self-understood that we had the court. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rosh of Bezdin. Moshe Rabbeinu was the head of that court. That would mean 71 elders. Now here it gets a little dicey. In the post-Mosaic era, in the post-Joshua era, halacha would be decided by a Sanhedrin, which would mean if there was a question as to what we should or shouldn't do, and our courts couldn't answer it, it would get bumped up to the next level. Eventually it would go to the Sanhedrin that sat outside of the Beit HaMikdash, firstly in the Har HaBayit, and then in the court, in the doorway, opening entrance courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. If we still could not resolve the problem, if we still couldn't find an answer or resolution, we then go into the chamber of hewn stone, what's called Lishkat HaGaziz, half of which was actually in the most sacred of scrimmage. We've talked about that in a previous class called We the North, the North area. And the Lishkat HaGaziz was partly outside of the actual sacred area, but the room was open, which allowed for the Sanhedrin to be seated. And that's how the halacha would be decided, by virtue of a majority vote. No, this is not about democracy. This is about the greatest, most brilliant minds of the Jewish people coming to a vote. This is not about ordinary people casting ballots. So the Tosfos Yom Tov says something very interesting. We know that in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu was the final word in halacha. Moshe Rabbeinu, when unsure, would wait to hear from God, like we learn in this week's parsha with the story of Tzelofchad, Tzelofchad's daughters. How would we deal with that inheritance? Moshe says, Im Deveshma, we have to rise and listen. We'll hear what God has to say. There was no Sanhedrin discussion. So in that case, the question that becomes posed, how could the Rambam emphasize that you need a Sanhedrin? Because it's kechol asher mara eischo, the way I showed it to you then, and then the chen tasu, that's how you should do ledorot. There was no real Sanhedrin. There wasn't a functioning Sanhedrin. So the Tosfos Yom Tov has another very interesting resolution of this. He says that Moshe Rabbeinu was bimkom Sanhedrin. Moshe Rabbeinu was like a walking Sanhedrin, a one-man Sanhedrin. But Judaism was not built to function in that fashion. Moshe Rabbeinu would be a one-man Sanhedrin. Yehoshua would be a one-man Sanhedrin, but that's all. So Moshe Rabbeinu was like the agency of Sanhedrin. The only thing that isn't clear to us is, where was the Melech? And that's where the Rambam finishes off and he says, Umesh Rabbeinu Melech Hoya. That concludes the study of Halacha Yud Aleph, the 11th Halacha of the 6th chapter of Hilchos Beis HaBechira. And Be'ezrat Hashem, on Sunday, we will continue. And there we will learn about the notion of how exactly this is performed. How do we actually expand the city of Yerushalayim? Stay tuned.